Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome, Curious Minds. Today, we are undertaking, well, a really fascinating and I think essential deep dive into how history gets written. Specifically, we're tackling the story of the Spanish conquest of the Americas. It's a story that for centuries has been presented as this grand epic of destiny, almost inevitable.
But as we'll see, the history we thought we knew, it turns out to be, well, let's say a carefully constructed myth. It's really the foundational myth of the entire modern Western Hemisphere, isn't it? Defining the origins of North, Central, and South America.
Absolutely. And we're diving into a key text that helps us see through that myth, The Conquistadors by Matthew Restall and Felipe Fernandez Armesto.
It's such a crucial corrective.
Because the traditional story is just so ingrained, you know, a few hundred brilliant, brave Spaniards, superior technology, overcoming millions. It's this ultimate David versus Goliath tale, but told from Goliath's perspective, claiming he was David.
Right. And the value of this book isn't just about correcting the 16th century record. It's really about teaching you, the listener, how to critically assess any dominant historical narrative you come across, whether it's about empires then or, you know, political movements now. It directly challenges that sort of heroic white savior stereotype and replaces it with something much messier, yeah, but also much closer to the complex truth, drawing heavily on indigenous sources, which is key.
Okay, so to understand how they pull this off, we should probably talk about the authors themselves. This collaboration, it seems pretty unique.
It really is. It brings together two distinct but complementary strengths. You've got Matthew Restall, who's an ethnohistorian. He's really a pioneer of what people call the New Conquest history.
Okay.
Restall focuses intensely on the granular, the local experience. He digs deep into indigenous perspectives using native language sources. His work on the Maya, for example, is foundational. He provides that hard archival evidence that really shatters the old Eurocentric myths.
So he's giving us the view from the ground up. The local politics, the nitty-gritty reality.
Exactly. Street-level history, you could say.
Yeah.
And then, complementing that perfectly, you have Felipe Fernandez Armesto. Now, he's a world-renowned global historian.
Right.
He provides the sweeping macro-level context. He's the one who steps back and asks, why was this particular wave of expansion happening right then? What were the global forces at play?
So he situates the Spanish expeditions within bigger patterns, European exploration, economic pressures, that kind of thing.
Precisely. And it's their combined expertise that makes the book so powerful. They can use Restall's detailed local evidence from indigenous sources to challenge those deeply embedded European myths, while Fernandez Armesto gives us the big picture, the global relevance of it all.
It's a really potent combination. Okay, let's get into the core argument then, the central thesis that, frankly, shakes things up quite a bit. The traditional story, as we said, Spanish win because they're just better. Steel, germs, horses, strategy, God on their side, a few super soldiers.
Yeah, the great man theory of history, basically. But the book argues very convincingly that this image was, first and foremost, a self-serving myth. And guess who created it?
The conquistadors themselves.
Exactly. They crafted this narrative of simple military superiority because it served their interests back home. It helped them get titles, land, pensions from the crown. It justified their actions.
Okay, so if it wasn't inherent Spanish superiority, better tech, better tactics, how did a relatively small number of them manage to be involved in the collapse of these huge empires, the Aztec and the Inca? What's the real answer the book gives us?
Well, the book is emphatic. Success was not down to some simple Spanish edge. It was highly contingent, opportunistic. They weren't walking into these stable, unified empires ready for a fair fight.
They were walking into
chaos, essentially. They stumbled into situations already ripe with internal conflict, even full-blown civil wars. They acted more like, armed entrepreneurs or mercenaries, jumping into pre-existing indigenous conflicts that were already tearing these empires apart from the inside.
Wow. So when you lay out the actual components, the math totally changes. What are those key factors that the old history books tended to ignore or downplay?
Restall and Fernandez Armesto really highlight three crucial components. Number one, and this is huge, massive native allies.
Right.
Indigenous groups provided the vast majority of the military muscle, the warriors, the logistical support, food, paths, intelligence, and they weren't fighting for Spain.
They were fighting for their own reasons, against their own oppressors.
Exactly. They were trying to overthrow their own imperial overlords, the Mexica, who we call the Aztecs or the Incas. The Spanish were just a useful, maybe temporary tool for them.
Okay, so that's factor one. Native allies doing most of the fighting. What's two?
Factor two, old world diseases. This is maybe the most devastating element. The true weapon of mass destruction, as they put it, wasn't gunpowder. It was smallpox. And measles, typhus.
And these arrived before the main Spanish forces sometimes.
Often, yes. Sweeping ahead of them, causing demographic catastrophe, wiping out 50, 70, sometimes up to 90% of populations, shattering societies, killing leaders, destroying morale, long before Cortez or Pizarro showed up with their swords.
Unbelievable. And the third factor.
Internal divisions. Crucially, both the Aztec and Inca empires weren't these monolithic, happy states. They were politically fragile, full of deep-seated resentment from subjugated peoples, and in the Inca case especially, reeling from recent civil war. This made them incredibly vulnerable to fragmentation.
So allies providing the manpower, disease wiping out populations and leadership, and the empires themselves already cracking under internal pressure, that completely reframes the conquistador figure, doesn't it? Takes them off the pedestal.
Absolutely. The romantic hero image just dissolves.
So who were these men, really, according to the book?
Well, first off, they weren't typically formal soldiers of the Spanish army. They were private adventurers, often guys in debt, actually. They had to fund their own expeditions or join as shareholders, hoping for a return on investment. Think of them as armed entrepreneurs.
Armed entrepreneurs. I like that. Driven by what? Gold, obviously, but what else?
Gold, yes, but also status. This is really important. Many were minor nobles, hidalgos, or even commoners from places like Extremadura in Spain, which was pretty impoverished. They saw the Americas as a chance to leapfrog the rigid social hierarchy back home.
Ah, so get rich quick and become somebody important in the New World, essentially. Escape the limitations of Spain.
Exactly. Acquire land, titles, indigenous labor, establish themselves as lords. It was this powerful mix of economic self-interest and ambition that drove the incredible risks they took.
And that kind of desperate drive probably explains a lot of the chaos and violence.
It does. And the constant infighting amongst the Spaniards themselves over the spoils. Sometimes they fought each other more fiercely than they fought any indigenous groups.
Okay, let's look at the most famous example. Hernan Cortez in Mexico. The book really takes aim at the genius strategist myth around him, right?
Oh, completely. Cortez was definitely charismatic, a smooth talker, and a massive opportunist. But a flawless strategist. No way. He made huge blunders, nearly got his entire force wiped out several times. His ultimate success was almost entirely contingent on factors outside his control.
Like what specifically?
Primarily the massive pre-existing hatred between the Mexica rulers in Tenochtitlan and the vast number of groups they had conquered and forced to pay tribute. People like the Tlaxcalans.
Right, the Tlaxcalans. So wait, if Cortez only had, what, a few hundred Spaniards initially? Are you saying the famous siege of Tenochtitlan, the Aztec capital? That wasn't really a Spanish victory.
Not in the way it's usually told. The book argues the fall of Tenochtitlan was basically the climax of a massive indigenous civil war, or perhaps better, a rebellion against Mexica imperial rule.
So who did the actual fighting?
The Tlaxcalans, the Totonacs, other allied groups. They provided tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of warriors. They conducted the siege. They provided the food, the canoes, the local knowledge. The Spanish were the catalyst, maybe some specialized shock troops, but the heavy lifting. That was indigenous. They saw Cortez as a means to get rid of the Mexica.
That's a radically different picture. Mm-hmm. And central to Cortez even being able to navigate this complex political landscape was Malinzin, right? Mm-hmm. Often called La Malinche. Her traditional portrayal as just a translator or a traitor seems way off.
It's incredibly simplistic and unfair. The book positions her as absolutely central. She wasn't just translating words. She was a brilliant political and linguistic strategist. She understood the nuances of Nahuatl culture, the local power dynamics, the deep resentment.
She was more like a high-level advisor and diplomat.
Absolutely. She enabled Cortez to understand and, crucially, exploit the empire's internal fractures. Without her ability to broker the alliance with the Tlaxcalans, it's highly unlikely Cortez would have succeeded. She was a key political actor in her own right.
Okay, let's shift south now to Peru and Francisco Pizarro. Does the same pattern hold true there, indigenous divisions being the key?
Even more so, perhaps. Pizarro was, well, different from Cortez. A hardened, illiterate veteran, maybe less politically subtle, but incredibly ruthless and driven by gold. And his timing, it was just astonishingly lucky.
How so?
He arrived precisely as the Inca Empire was emerging, shattered from a massive, devastating civil war between two half-brothers, Atahualpa and Huascar, who were fighting for the throne.
So again, he didn't conquer a unified, stable empire. He basically walked into the aftermath of a brutal internal conflict.
A power vacuum.
Exactly. The infrastructure was damaged, the population exhausted and divided, loyalties were split. The famous capture of Atahualpa at Cajamarca, often painted as this great feat of Spanish arms against overwhelming odds.
Yeah. The authors argue it was more a triumph of surprise, exploiting Inca ritualized warfare practices, which didn't involve immediate lethal force in the same way. Plus, capturing the divine king, Atahualpa, effectively decapitated the highly centralized Inca state in that moment of crisis. It caused psychological shock and paralysis.
It really drives home the idea that Spanish success wasn't some guaranteed outcome. And the book contrasts these, well, lucky successes with outright failures, doesn't it?
Yes, and that's crucial context. Look at Hernando de Soto's expedition through what's now the southeastern U.S. He had a large force, wandered for years, found vast populations, but no single centralized, already fractured empire to exploit like the Aztecs or Incas.
And what happened?
Total disaster. He died, his expedition disintegrated, achieved nothing lasting except spreading disease and terror. It shows that success was entirely dependent on finding that specific combination, a centralized state already riddled with internal conflict and weakened by disease. They had to hit the jackpot.
And there's another counter-narrative mentioned, Alvar Núñez Cabeza de Vaca, which shows a totally different path.
An incredible story. Shipwrecked off Florida, he spent 8 years wandering across the continent. But he survived not by conquering, but by adapting.
How?
He became a trader, learned local languages, and eventually gained renown as a healer among various native groups. He lived with them, not against them. His story shows that peaceful coexistence and integration were actually possible paths. But
the dominant model, the armed entrepreneur model, was just too focused on quick extraction of wealth, gold, silver, slaves, to allow for that.
Exactly. The economic imperative for rapid return on investment usually trumped any possibility of slower, more adaptive approaches.
Which brings us back to the myth itself. If the reality was so messy and contingent, how did this simplistic story of heroic, inevitable Spanish victory become the story for centuries? Where did it come from?
It largely came from legal paperwork, believe it or not. Specifically, something called the probanza de merito, the proofs of merit.
Proofs of merit. What were they?
These were essentially mandatory legal petitions. Conquistadors had to write them and submit them to the Spanish crown. Why? To get rewarded. They needed to justify titles, land grants, pensions, control over indigenous labor, and often just to get out of the massive debts they'd racked up funding the expedition in the first place.
So they were basically like 16th century legal briefs combined with a PR campaign and maybe a resume, all rolled into one.
That's a perfect way to put it. And in these probanzas, they naturally, deliberately exaggerated their own achievements, their own brilliance. They downplayed their mistakes, their near disasters, the times they almost got wiped out.
And crucially,
they systematically erased or minimized the role of their native allies. They had to present the victory as solely their achievement to maximize their personal rewards from the crown.
So they wrote the tens of thousands of Tlaxcalan warriors right out of the story.
Pretty much. Cortés' own famous letters back to the king are the classic example of this genre. Brilliantly written, self-serving, and incredibly influential. They became the primary sources, the accepted historical record that generations of historians relied on.
It's kind of staggering, isn't it? That a pile of self-promotional, debt-settling legal documents from 500 years ago formed the bedrock of our understanding of such a major world event.
It is. And it leads us straight into the really powerful core themes the book hammers home, themes that challenge the simplistic view and give us a much clearer picture.
Okay, let's talk themes. What's the first big one?
The first, and maybe most important, is restoring indigenous agency.
Ah, yes, this feels critical. The book makes it clear these conquests weren't just things that happened to native people, they were active participants.
Absolutely. It argues that, fundamentally, many of these conflicts were indigenous civil wars or rebellions that the Spanish opportunistically inserted themselves into. It shows native peoples as active political and military agents, making calculated decisions based on their own interests, like getting out from under Aztec domination, for instance.
It reminds us to look for the motivations and strategies of all the players involved in any conflict, not just the ones who wrote the most famous accounts.
Precisely. Theme two shifts our focus dramatically. Disease as the decisive factor.
We touched on this, but the book really emphasizes it, right?
It puts it front and center, Smallpox, typhus, measles, these were the truly decisive weapons. They caused demographic collapses on a scale it's hard to fathom, 50, 70, 90% population losses in some areas. This wrecked social structures, eliminated leaders, caused spiritual crises, often before major military encounters even happened.
So the military conquest was almost like a mop-up operation after a biological catastrophe that the Spanish didn't even fully understand, let alone intend in that way.
That's a good way to think about it. It's a stark reminder of how powerful unforeseen biological and environmental forces can be in history, often outweighing human plans or military tech.
Okay, and the third key theme.
That takes us back to the conquistadors themselves, the armed entrepreneur, reframing their motivations.
Right, not just God, gold, and glory in the romantic sense.
Less glory, perhaps, and more, paying back investors and getting rich. The book stresses the economic drivers. These men were heavily indebted, driven by the pursuit of wealth and, as we discussed, social status. It wasn't purely religious zeal or patriotism, though those narratives were certainly used.
And understand that economic desperation helps explain their behavior. The risk-taking, the violence, the infighting.
Exactly. They were operating under immense financial pressure. They needed results fast. This fueled the relentless drive for loot and the often brutal opportunistic tactics.
These themes really coalesce into some powerful core statements in the book, don't they? Lines that just stick with you and force you to rethink everything.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a few that really encapsulate the whole argument. Let's maybe touch on a couple.
Okay.
One that really cuts to the heart of the great man myth is this. The conquistadors were not extraordinary men achieving extraordinary things, but ordinary men achieving ordinary things under extraordinary circumstances.
Mm. So it wasn't about individual genius, but about being in the right place at the right chaotic time. Luck and circumstance were paramount.
Precisely. It decenters the individual Spaniard and centers the situation, the disease, the civil war, the alliances.
And then there's the statement that really flips the script on who did the conquering.
Yeah.
Every Spanish conquest was in reality an indigenous conquest with Spanish leadership.
Yeah, that one's powerful. It forces you to see the Tlaxcalans, the Huancas, all these other groups, not as secondary helpers, but as the primary military force pursuing their own political goals, with the Spanish sort of riding the wave, providing a certain kind of leadership or catalyst.
Wow. Okay, another one.
How about the one driving home the biological point? The most effective weapons of the conquest were not steel and gunpowder, but pathogens.
Simple, direct, and undeniable when you look at the numbers. It underscores that biological catastrophe.
Mm-hmm. And finally, one that turns the lens back on us, the readers of history. The real question is not why the Spanish won, but why we have told the story of their victory in such a misleading way for so long.
That's a great one. It shifts the focus from the events themselves to how the story got told. It pushes us towards historical skepticism, questioning who writes history and why. It points right back to those probanzas.
Exactly. And that leads directly into why reading this kind of history is so valuable, not just for understanding the past, but for navigating the present.
For sure. It feels like a masterclass in critical thinking, really. The most direct application is learning to be skeptical of any dominant narrative. Always ask, who wrote this story? Why? Whose voice is missing?
Right. If Cortez letters were basically self-serving legal documents dressed up as history, what are the equivalents today?
Corporate press releases, political autobiographies, even, you know, those carefully curated founder stories from tech companies.
Absolutely. They're all modern probanzas in a way designed to highlight success, downplay failure or luck, and often erase the contributions of others. We need that same critical lens Restall and Fernandez Armesto apply to the 16th century for the information flooding us today.
And it also pushes us away from simplistic explanations, doesn't it? The conquest wasn't about one single cause. It was this complex interplay of disease, politics, alliances, technology, individual ambition.
Exactly. It's a perfect historical model for understanding complex systems. We shouldn't accept easy, single-cause answers for major modern events, either whether it's, say, an election result, a social movement, or even why one company succeeds and another fails. Reality is usually a messy interaction of multiple factors, internal weaknesses, and sheer chance.
And maybe there's a cautionary tale in there, too, about unintended consequences. The Spanish thought they were bringing civilization and faith, but inadvertently unleashed biological devastation.
That's a really important point. It serves as a warning for any major intervention or disruption in a complex system today, whether it's rolling out new technology like AI, implementing large-scale social policies, or whatever, there will always be unforeseen second and third order effects. We need a certain humility about our ability to predict or control those.
So, wrapping things up, what's the single biggest takeaway for you from this whole deep dive, this dismantling of the myth?
For me, it's the complete demolition of that idea of inevitability. The conquest wasn't destined. It wasn't proof of European superiority. It was profoundly contingent. Mm-hmm. It really depended on this perfect storm hitting at just the right moment. The pandemic diseases arriving when they did, the Inca Civil War peaking just as Pizarro landed, the specific political grievances that made groups like the Tlaxcalans willing to ally with Cortez. Take away any one of those elements, and the history of the Americas could look completely different.
Yeah, that contingency is key. For me, the most powerful takeaway is the restoration of agency. Seeing indigenous peoples not merely as victims of an unstoppable force, but as active, calculating political and military agents operating in an incredibly complex and dangerous world. They were resisting, adapting, negotiating, forming alliances, pursuing their own goals right alongside the Spanish.
It shifts from a story solely of tragedy and victimhood to one that also includes resilience, political maneuvering, and adaptation under unimaginable pressure.
Absolutely. A much richer, more complex, and ultimately, I think, more truthful understanding of how the modern Americas came to be.
A truly essential reframing. Definitely makes you think.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.